This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Hello, Australia. This is Noam, Apple and Top from Apple Models in Thailand. The world's first transgender model division on Joy 94.9.
This is another podcast of the World Wide Wave on joy.org.au.
Surfing the globe, bringing you news, views, and current affairs for the LGBT community, this is the World Wide Wave.
This is World Wide Wave, Joy's international news and current affairs show. We take you around the globe one country at a time.
When we're actually all in the studio together.
When we're not going around the globe.
Because a couple of us have been on other sides of the globe until quite recently.
I have. I may nod off in the show. I only flew back in this morning, so just push me. That voice you heard there is Dean. G'day, Dean.
As always, I was here
holding the
entire time.
Damien is here as well.
Hello.
Paul's back with us too.
Paul is back, and congratulations to Dean for holding the fort for us.
Well, Damien was here too.
Some of the time, not all the time.
Send all your angry emails and messages to Damien.
Now, even though Australia's gay rights push had begun in a small way prior, it really accelerated with the inspiration of the Stonewall riots in the USA in 1969. One man was at the forefront of that push here in Australia and has remained so ever since. In 1971, he published his first book called Homosexual, Oppression and Liberation, which is often referred to as doing for LGBT rights what Germaine Greer's The Female Eunuch did for women's rights.
To critique how far we have come in global LGBTI rights and how far we have to go, tonight we have a very special guest with us. Activist, historian, Q&A panellist, author, academic and gay icon, Dennis Altman. He is an emeritus professor and professorial fellow in human security at La Trobe University. Dennis will be live in the studio with us shortly, but courtesy of the ABC TV, here's a taste of what you have coming up tonight.
More significant is the fact that we're in the middle of a national debate about same-sex marriage. And in that debate, nobody, and maybe there's one exception on this panel, we'll find out, nobody is prepared to say we as queer people don't have equal rights. The argument, in a sense, that argument has been won. That debate is over.
Worldwide Wrap, LGBT news from around the world, scanning the globe for stories for the diverse gay and lesbian communities from Australia's Joy 94.9. This is the Worldwide Wrap.
We're starting off this week in China, where an increasing number of gay people are thinking of coming out. Now, the results of the third annual China LGBT Community Report have been announced, and they reveal some interesting progress with regards to attitudes towards LGBTI rights in the country. The report surveyed 20,000 respondents online, 17,000 identified as LGBT, and 3,000 as non-LGBT. For those of you who aren't aware, China is the most populated country in the world, with just under 1.4 billion inhabitants, which means the size of its LGBTI population is estimated to be between 70 million and 140 million people.
That is one hell of a coming out party.
Absolutely.
I want to be at that party.
Now, of course, when you hear figures like that, in terms of consumer spending... So the China's pink market is estimated to be more than $145 billion.
Wow.
Now, despite this, attitudes veer towards the traditional, and many LGBTI people are under pressure from families to adopt that straight lifestyle, marry, and get those grandkids happening.
You know, that's one of the few cases, I think, where money has not trumped everything else, because normally the economy just, you know, steamrolls everything and values and all that go out the window.
Only a matter of time, because more LGB people plan to come out. 22% of gay and bisexual men and 12% of lesbian and bisexual women plan to tell no one about their identity in the next 5 years versus 30% of men and 16% of women last year.
So it went 30% down to 22% and 16% down to 12%
yes,
of people that are hiding.
There's a bit of a push towards gay marriage as well, or thought of it, I guess, 54% 64% of men and 65% of women say that same-sex marriage is their ideal relationship, compared to 40 and 44% a year ago.
Now, it's not legal in China, but an increasing number of gay people say they would consider wedding abroad, even if it costs money to do so. 58% of men, 75% of women. But pressure from family remains, so it's the biggest concern, 70% for those who are part of the LGBT community.
We did a show on China a little while ago, and that definitely surfaced as a recurring and a strong theme is the...
And that whole, fake marriage market.
Oh, that was quite insightful, well, yes. So.
Now, interestingly, 56% of men and 62% of women said that a company's support for LGBT-friendly policies and laws was the most important factor that influenced their purchasing decisions. So this is just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, most definitely. The event was put together by a coalition of organisers, including Blued and
which
Rella.
Which is like a grinder type.
App. Yeah, and Rella, which is kind of the women's, equivalent. So, yeah, very interesting stuff from China.
Across to Ivory Coast now, where a court has found two men guilty of public indecency after they were accused of engaging in same-sex sexual acts. Now, this case is something of a surprise. It's the first case of its kind in a country known for its actual relative tolerance towards LGBTI people.
Even though it is in Africa.
It is. The two men, aged 31 and 19, received three-month prison sentences, even though they denied having sexual relationships. The officials have declined to answer questions about the case, saying that it was the trial was public, therefore everything that's been put out there has been put out there.
Now, whilst the Ivory Coast does not criminalise same-sex sexual acts between consenting adults, it does have an issue and penalises public indecency. So that's kind of the focus, allegedly, of that case.
It has the penal code, by any chance?
Boom, boom.
Of UK?
I'm here all night. Try the veal, you know. Now, moving on to Taiwan. We've been speaking about Taiwan a bit recently because of all the kerfuffle about the potential for same-sex marriage or marriage equality over there. Now, thousands have protested in the capital city of Taipei against draft bills that would make Taiwan the first place to legalise marriage equality, and they were arguing that traditional family values would be undermined. What's interesting about this news story is how much of it does compare and parallel the experience in Australia. The protesters dressed in white, and they held placards with the slogans including "Stand forward for the next generation's happiness."
Well, with marriage?
Yes. Supporters of gay rights are more hopeful, but opposing voices have been building since the proposed amendments to legalise marriage equality passed the initial vetting in Parliament earlier this month. Now, it has roots in Confucianism, and they translate into a strong sense of adherence to traditional values, but they've got things about issues that the religious people have an issue criticising the absence of public participation in drafting the bills, and other things that are very similar to the situation here in Australia.
And in brief, in the USA, a Minnesota mother is suing her own daughter for transitioning, and that's not a joke.
The Islam-based United Development Party has recommended that LGBT people be cured of their sexual orientations in a program covered by Indonesian Social Security.
And 153 couples have taken advantage of Malta's 2014 law, which legalised same-sex civil partnerships, and that's out of a population of only 500,000.
And coming up in a couple of minutes, Dennis Altman is with us, and he's actually got some breaking news on the UN SOGI vote. We'll be right with you in a few minutes.
And that's a wrap.
That's your Worldwide Wrap. Keep up with LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like us on Facebook, Worldwide Wave, or visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
Our guest tonight is Dennis Altman. Dennis, thank you for coming in and speaking with us.
It's always fun coming in and speaking with you.
Excellent. Now, you, just before we came into the studio, you had a bit of an update for us on the UN SOGI vote. So this is basically an anti-vote that had gone up at the United Nations. So a vote that...
It was a vote to overrule the appointment by the Human Rights Council of an independent expert, who's actually already been appointed, to look into violence directed at LGBT people globally. There was a move led by the African bloc at the UN in the General Assembly to overturn that. It was defeated, but it was defeated very narrowly. And I think what I was saying to you, Matt, before is that if it were to come up again under the new American administration, who I assume would not lobby for it to be passed, I think there's a good chance that it would be, the vote would have lost.
Mm, so it was only about 10 or so votes in it.
I can't remember the exact figures, but it's very narrow. And I'm not going to put in a plug because it actually is mirrors the reality of global polarisation around queer rights. That's the topic of the book Queer Wars that I wrote with John Simons, my colleague, and was published by Polity earlier this year. There you are. And I said I was no good at self-promotion.
Now, talking about the US, because you've also written before about the importance of the US in framing and influencing global LGBT rights, everything from movies to fashion to media. We've got a president-elect, Trump, on the way. How might this change global LGBT rights?
Look, I think we have to... I'd answer that in two ways, because one is I do not want to give the impression that I think Trump is anything but an extraordinary disaster for the US and globally. But having said that, I think I'd also have to point out that the US has consistently been the global model, irrespective of its political alliances. So that during the 1980s, in the Reagan period, we certainly didn't have a US administration that was in any sense pro-gay. But the global impact of queer culture in the US continued. I don't see that changing. What I do see changing is the work that's been going on at an international level in various organs of the UN, for example, where the US has increasingly taken a very strong position. I think if this is reversed, the hostility which is being mobilised by the Russians, by the Arab and African blocs, will probably prevent the UN making any further moves.
Two steps forward, one step back.
Or two steps back, one step forward. I'm afraid I'm too old to believe in the inevitable march of progress.
Now, one of the trademarks of the Obama administration has been the way they have used foreign policy to influence LGBT rights. So you would assume that that would be gone.
Well, I think it's important to not get too upset about this. I think, yes, it will be gone. I think, however, when I say let's not get too upset about this, my cynical view is that a lot of the current administration's appeal to global queer rights was essentially about appealing to the American LGBT electorate.
Mm-hmm.
What real difference will make for people who are struggling on the ground is actually hard to tell. Certainly if the Trump administration were to align themselves with an active anti-queer position, and we know that Trump and Putin are best buddies, right? Now, as best buddies, they might decide to go on a homophobic bashing spree together. In that case, things will be pretty tough. And certainly US influence, I think, will be far less supportive of a whole range of progressive issues, including ours, over the next 4 years.
What about momentum, therefore? I mean, if we have a look at when the vote went through in Ireland for same-sex marriage, in UK, and then the US Supreme Court, there just seemed to be a global momentum. Even I would say that in Australia it put pressure on our politicians here, thinking, my gosh, there's a wave coming, what do we do? We now see with the success of Donald Trump a sort of an emboldening of right-wing views, not just USA but across Europe. How do you see that playing out in terms of momentum? Could there be a domino effect the other way in LGBT rights?
I think it's complicated. The reason I think it's complicated is that a number of the right-wing parties, particularly in Europe, are not homophobic. Marine Le Pen in France is surrounded by gay men. We may not like that, but that is a reality. The nationalist right-wing forces in the Netherlands are quite explicitly pro-gay because they use that as part of their attack on Islam. They say migrants from Islamic countries threaten Dutch protection of queer rights. Now, I think that Trump himself is not particularly interested in this issue, but certainly the Republican majority in Congress are deeply homophobic, deeply transphobic. There will be, I think, some very nasty domestic legislation. It is even possible that the Supreme Court decision will be overruled, although that's complicated.
In looking at LGBT rights today, and I guess you've been in this domain since the 70s, in the thick of things, mm-hmm. it seems to be much nicer today. Is that, are we too nice in our fight for
is
rights?
Is that superficial, though? Is that, are we, is it genuinely nicer?
I'm not sure who, nicer for whom. You mean it's nicer for us sitting around this table in Joy FM?
Is the gay community being nicer in its fight and not being demanding? Not there doesn't seem to be as much fist thumping.
I think you know, this is in a sense the product of success. I think that, you know, by and large in Western countries, but not in most of the world, our movement's been pretty successful. I think the problem is for most people in most countries, that is not true.
Our guest tonight is Dennis Altman, author, historian, cage rattler for the LGBT movement, and we've got a heap more coming up. You're on Joy 94.9.
This is Nikki from Canada, where everybody can get married. You're listening to the Worldwide Wave on Joy 94.9.
A few messages coming in. Thanks for these. Keep them coming. I think middle-class gay men live in a very comfortable bubble. They don't have to fight for their rights. I look at Trump as a positive for activists in the USA. They'll be more vigilant than ever before. Do you think this is going to fire up people in the USA?
Well, I think one ought to think very carefully why they would need to be fired up. I mean, the idea that things should get worse so we become activists, if you think about the logic of it, there isn't any. Because, in fact, if things aren't getting worse, why do we need to be activists? You see what I'm saying? There's a
zero-sum game.
Yeah, thank you. Exactly. It's a zero-sum game. And, yes, I think people will be fired up, but unfortunately they'll be fired up to preserve rights that have been won rather than to change things. It's going to be, I think, a long and nasty period of trying to protect people.
It'll
who
be holding
vulnerable.
Ground, I guess, holding rather ground, than progressing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I read somewhere that you, in talking about the marriage equality debate, you were saying that it's marriage equality is not a human rights issue. Is it taking away from, on a global scale, is it taking away from bigger issues?
Look, when I think about human rights for people who are queer, however we use that term, I use a phrase, and the phrase is rape, murder, torture. That's what a lot of people across the world are facing. Compared to that, the right to walk with your partner in matching tuxedos down the aisle of a church really is not a significant issue. I understand why marriage has become so symbolically important for people in Australia, but I think it's important to try and keep some perspective. The reality is that same-sex relationships are legally recognised for almost all purposes in Australia, that people who are in a position to get married are already people who are out, are comfortable with their sexuality, and have a committed partner. That's a pretty good deal, and sometimes, not always, but sometimes what I hear from the marriage equality movement is a total sense of disinterest in people whose situations are far, far more precarious than theirs.
You mentioned the word queer there. Is there a... I mean, we have LGBTIQAA, it's alphabet soup.
Which probably had another letter added on, Matt, since we came into the studio.
Right.
This is why I use the word queer. I think queer is a convenient way of talking as broadly as we can about people who are sexually and gender diverse.
So is there a universal queer identity?
No, but I think there is, sadly, a universal vulnerability. I think that in almost every society we know anything about, people who sexual orientation or gender identity doesn't follow the dominant heteronormative models gets into trouble. I mean, I'm reducing it to very simple language because I think that's where there is a sort of common sense. There certainly isn't, you know, if you go into, I don't know, the slums of Nairobi, the villages of Bangladesh, the backwoods of Paraguay, there are certainly people who have homosexual attraction, who might have homosexual relations. There are people who are transgender. Whether they can identify with the very Western concept of LGBTIQ, I think is very doubtful.
In that Western sphere, we see a demise of gay precincts and gay clubs and the like. Mm. And I guess there's any number of reasons why that might be happening, but are we losing our identity?
I've just come back from California, and, you know, what's interesting is if you go to the Castro, it is as if it's been preserved in aspic. In fact, it's rather wonderful because some people listening may have been in the Castro in the worst years of the AIDS epidemic. The
San late Francisco, 80s. Yes.
Yeah, the late 80s, the early 90s, when the Castro, which was, you know, the quintessential gay area, was really decimated. It was very sad. It's now revived, but what's interesting, it's been revived in this quite unintentionally nostalgic way. So there is this sense...
capturing history.
Yeah.
Like Tales of the City or something.
It is very Tales of the City. And, you know, the same is also true if you walk down Santa Monica Boulevard in West Hollywood. And earlier this year I was in Berlin, and Berlin has a very clear, well-defined gay area with more leather shops than I would have thought even a major metropolis could support. But it's German, so, you know, very clean, very well organized, very well ordered. And what's interesting is that while we've seen some of that collapse here, at the same time, there is a real strength, isn't there, of community institutions. So we may have lost some of the geographic sites. I mean, Oxford Street is certainly not what Oxford Street was in the 1980s. But the sense of belonging to a community is clearly there. If it weren't there, we wouldn't be sitting here in a radio station called Joy FM.
The internet has played a very positive role in terms of being able to share global LGBT stories that we would otherwise not hear. There's probably been some negatives on the other side of sharing those, you know, sharing bad stories, sharing lies, and I think even of the comments that have come out of the US election where people were shocked. I guess, are we, with our personalised internet feeds and social media feeds, are we in our own LGBT bubble and not seeing what's going on in
well,
the world?
Probably some people are, but I think against that are those vast number of people for whom this is the only way of making contact. And I think for people who are growing up in environments in which there isn't acceptance of their sexuality or their gender identity, the internet opens up possibilities that were quite unimaginable, what, even 10 years ago, certainly 20 years ago. I think, yes, all the dangers we talk about with social media are there, but I think on balance, so are the advantages.
Certainly in terms of our podcasts, we have numbers of how many people download our podcasts, and it's amazing how many of them come from countries like, say, Nigeria, and or rather the shows on certain topics get downloaded, and it's amazing.
Iran
how,
is still our most popular download.
I think you're right, yeah. So it tends to be the countries where there's not much of in mm-hmm. the way of gay culture. I think people do a search with a hashtag and they go, oh, this could be interesting.
So, and, of course, risk a great deal, because if they're caught in a country like Iran, that presumably will get them into great and unpleasant trouble.
Some very positive comments coming through. And a question here, Dennis. What do you think about having gay conservatives in our government? So politicians who are gay in government, do you think it'll make a significant difference?
I think that's probably referring to perhaps Tim Wilson.
I'd say so.
I think it's referring
to... There's probably
a few there, though. There are four...
Trent Zimmerman?
Yes. There are four openly gay Liberal MPs. One would hope that in time it has an impact, but on balance, I'm very dubious. And I think that they're going to have a tough time. Well, let's leave it at that.
A tough time.
A tough time.
In trying to move things forward.
In trying to win over what appears to be a dominant socially and culturally conservative faction in the governing parties, who are clearly emboldened by what's happened in the US. I mean, that is, of course, one of the immediate dangers for us, that the right wing in Australia takes heart from the worst aspects of the Trump victory.
But, Dennis, do you think there's a really strong chance that they could overreach I mean, already some of the... I mean, it seems like they're like children in a candy store. Like, is there a chance that they could just go a bit nuts and just, you know, just go too far?
Politicians going nuts?
I mean, I would think there's some evidence of that already.
I thought that was likely to happen had there been a plebiscite. That is, I thought that the no case was likely to be so extreme that they would piss off a majority of people. I'm not sure that I still think that. I think that unfortunately, the social conservatives include some people who are very smart. They get it. And they know how to appeal to people's unease at rapid social change. And we're very bad at understanding that because we tend to attack everyone who's uneasy as being hostile rather than saying, we understand you're uneasy, let's talk about it. And I think that there is a real problem politically for us as a movement in that.
That's the voice of Dennis Altman joining us here on World Wide Wave, and we've got a bit more coming up very shortly.
Want to hear more? Find out about LGBT life in over 100 countries. Download free podcasts of this show. Subscribe to iTunes or follow us on Twitter. Visit joy.org.au/worldwidewave.
This is Mahida from Nigeria, and you are on World Wide Wave.
Another question. What significant legacy has Mr. Obama left the GLBTI community in the USA? Was he a pioneer for equality? Do you think he's as good as the PR makes him out to be?
I don't think he was a pioneer. I think he was a very successful follower. I mean, I think...
A politician.
Well, he was a politician. He read the way moves were changing. It was not very difficult, after all, to support court decisions. One would hope that the President of the United States, on balance, would support decisions of the Supreme Court.
One would hope. We'll see in the next term. Now, in your book, Queer Wars, you talk about the polarisation of LGBT international rights, rights on the international level. Are we getting into a stage where we have the haves and the have-nots?
I think very clearly, yes. We're very conscious of how things have improved in all sorts of ways in countries like Australia. If we just go north to Indonesia, over the last year, there's been a growing wave of very nasty homophobia, which is fueled by political and religious authorities. And what we're seeing in a lot of countries across the world is the use of homophobia as a convenient way of building nationalism. I've made the comment that in rich countries we scapegoat refugees, in poor countries they scapegoat queers. And if you're really lucky, you go to somewhere like Hungary or Poland where at the moment they scapegoat both. But I think that this is a reality of the modern world, and it's something that we in Australia don't take nearly seriously enough. We're not nearly aware enough of what is happening in the countries immediately to our north to people who are gay, queer, LGBT, whatever term you want to use, and who are facing increasing political persecution.
How do you think we should embrace that or take that into account, and how do you think that should manifest itself here in Australia locally?
Look, I think that often we can't do more than have an awareness, because our going in and saying this is bad can often be counterproductive. And I think that some of the Obama administration's flag waving, when the flag's been the rainbow flag, has actually been counterproductive. It is not helpful. I think there is one area where Australia really could do something that would be globally significant, and that is in our treatment of asylum seekers. When the story came out about current asylum seekers being held in detention, being sent to the US, one of the Australian newspaper's columnists said, well, it's okay for single men in Papua New Guinea because they can live in Papua New Guinea. This is absolute crap, because if you're a gay man, you face either criminal proceedings
years in
or
prison.
Death. Exactly,
14
or
years
death.
In prison in Papua New Guinea.
And certainly great violence. And that this is being reported in a mainstream newspaper, I don't hear screams of protest from our community leaders. And this is partly why I do think that if we're talking about human rights, we need to think beyond our borders. And the one area which links our borders, I'm using the term deliberately, which links the domestic and the international, is our treatment of people who seek asylum because of their sexuality.
Dennis, you're obviously very passionate about LGBT rights and you've been in this space for a long time. Now, in the intro to the show, we called you a gay icon. Does that sit comfortably with you?
Oh, God. Well, it's better than
being called... You're up there with Kylie Minogue and...
oh, in that case, I like it. Okay. No. No, it's better than being called a gay elder, which is what they often do. Look, I could quote Gore Vidal. Gore once said that if you live long enough, you become an icon. I do get a bit embarrassed by it, but, you know, it's nice. I think what does surprise me a little bit is that one gets to be known for nothing one's done at all. One gets to be known because the name has somehow floated around for long enough that it's sort of come into, you know, some people's subconscious sense. The next step, which I really like, which is they went out and bought books, is a long way off.
Speaking
of books, so your book is called Queer Wars. Where can people get a copy?
Well, certainly at Hares
and
Hyenas. At good bookstores.
And we'll pop a link on our Facebook page after the show. Dennis, thank you very much for coming in and speaking to us and sharing with us your views of the LGBT world.
It was fun.
Excellent.
Receive LGBT news from around the world throughout the week. Like World Wide Wave on Facebook now.
It's a World Wide Wave. Big thank you to our guest tonight, Dennis Altman.
Also, a big thank you to all those that have messaged in on Facebook, Margaret, Kun, Helen, Naomi, and a heap more. That's W3Joy on Facebook.
Thank you again to our podcaster, Mark.
We'll catch you next week on World Wide Wave.
Thank you for listening to the World Wide Wave podcast. We're always looking for interested guests and news tips. You can email us at worldwidewave@joy.org.au.
Representing, celebrating. Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.